You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello and welcome to episode 26 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
We've got lots of news that we want, I mean lots of news that we want to get through this week before we get onto our main feature, where we'll be discussing a certain trope of media products. But first, the news. So DC went and cancelled a whole bunch of comics from their New 52 range this week. Well, it's not starting this week, but basically six different series are being wound up, which includes some Hawkman thing and Sword and Sorcery thing, I think. That those are the only names I can remember. And at
Deathstroke. Deathstroke's going. What the fuck are they playing at?
At the same time, they're going, oh, and we're launching two comics that are going to be observations of the Occupy Wall Street movement, but from a superhero angle. First one is The Movement, which comes from Gail Simone, who, if you kind of remember, is one of the main driving forces behind the Batgirl comics. And from a team that I don't know the name of, The Green Team, which has been done by Baltazar and Franco. So basically, The Movement, clearly it's kind of like, it's more pro the Occupy movement. The Green Team, well, if you've seen the pictures that have been online, it involves wads of cash and hands. So it's kind of clear where their interests lie. I'm not sure about this whole sort of, this sort of six different series. It's kind of went... with this announcement, and then it replaced, and at the same time they announced two political comic series,
which is kind of interesting, because if you think about it, most conventional superheroes, they're not really either anti or pro kind of government.
At the same time, though, a whole bunch of them are actually technically libertarian, with the way that they try to operate outside of government law, and at the same time, the way they deal with market forces. I'm looking at you, Bruce Wayne.
Vigilantes.
But I mean, obviously the Occupy movement is all about, you know, the 1% and you know, that type of thing. And obviously, you know, superheroes will uphold the law, even if it does, kind of benefit that 1%. So it's quite... In a way, it's interesting, but by the same token, it's slightly hypocritical for superheroes to kind of be involved.
In a way, I would say most superheroes would uphold the law, but it would be more than moral law, if you see what I mean.
Wait, does that mean they will or won't chase after legal tax dodgers?
Oh, well, no.
They've got bigger fish to fry.
They can't chase after Amazon.
They do the moral right, but possibly while drinking a highly sugared coffee at the same time.
Bruce Wayne's probably got shares in Amazon.
Oh no! As I said before we started recording, when we were going over what we're going to talk about, and I was like, I wonder if they'd considered a Monsieur Frank Miller. At any point to cover this, because he clearly would have been good for the Green Team side of argument. If anyone's unaware of this, Frank Miller, in the last couple of years when the movement started, wrote this horrendous blog post that was against the whole concept and was about as right wing as you could get. I mean, quite frankly, I'm surprised that Frank Miller, Chuck Norris, and who else is pretty bad? He was with Mitt Romney for the campaign.
The Republicans.
Basically, like, he's quite Republican.
Mitt Romney and the Republicans playing tonight for your pleasure.
Also, do not talk to me about Chuck Norris in a positive manner, because I don't like Chuck Norris.
But by the same token, you have the counterpoint of, didn't Alan Moore actually come out in support?
Alan Moore came out in support of the Prime Movement.
Thus proving he's awesome.
Yeah. So the next celebrity death match is going to be Alan Moore versus Frank Miller.
And it would make complete sense, actually, considering that both of their careers kind of took off around the same period. So
special referee Chuck Norris.
No, he would be too biased. It's gonna have to be somebody.
We're gonna have to resurrect Bruce Lee.
Maybe we could find a manga artist or writer to sort of referee the whole thing. That might be best. Yeah.
The thing is, he's one of those celebs where so long as you don't follow any of his politics, yeah, he's fine. But then you see some of his videos, especially the ones he did before the the most recent American election, and he's like, oh God, he's insane.
Yeah, I think the Josh Sweden video was one of the better numbers to come out of all that.
That was quite interesting, because I mean, obviously you can understand Joss Whedon being, more towards the Democrats, but the fact that he's come out anti-Republican is quite a stance. Quite a bold move.
But anyway,
it just makes me heart him more.
Basically, we've got potential political comics coming out of DC. Whether or not they will have the same poignancy about that, I think the last sort of politically grounded things that I enjoyed was certainly Marvel Civil War.
Yeah, I mean, part of the thing with Marvel Civil War is that obviously you're having hero versus hero.
Mm.
Now, when it comes to something like...
It is questionable who the heroes are.
Superheroes, almost by their very nature, should be kind of clear-cut. This hero is doing good, this villain is doing bad.
There shouldn't be any real sort of...
There's moral grey.
To be honest, I would have preferred it if they'd perhaps taken a little bit more of a Gotham Central kind of style.
That'd have been cool.
That would have, because then it wouldn't have been concentrating on the superheroes so much. Like, they would occasionally come in, but actually what you're hearing are, like, the stories and stuff from either side more.
Yeah.
The actual humans involved, the actual people involved.
The thing that struck me about this is, well, apart from the fact that nearly half of the 52... have now been cancelled.
Is this?
Are they still calling it the new 52 then?
Yeah, they're still sort of marketing it like that, resurrecting old franchises, basically cycling through them.
Yeah, apart from that, where it's here's a big launch, we've now killed most of them. Well, yeah, nearly.
Yeah.
It's a Marvel Now series being set in the past. It kind of does
a Marvel just then.
Yeah.
But yet the entire idea of DC doing Occupy as a movement, as a theme, with two sides, is just really bloody weird to me.
It doesn't feel appropriate. I'm not against them not doing, but it's the thing is that they're not doing superhero comics with it. If they were doing it as if they were putting it under an imprint like Vertigo or something,
then it would make perfect sense. But seeing as they seem to have been killing Vertigo,
yes, as we will,
I reckon they've got a new secret CEO. His name is Frank Miller.
Oh God.
I'm gonna take us on now to news last week that it kind of started off as a rumor. There was pretty much confirmed that J.J. Abrams is pretty much in a degree of pre-production for Half-Life and Portal films with Valve.
Is he the only bugger about now who can actually direct a film?
Well, clearly everyone's fallen out of love with Christopher Nolan, because otherwise I would have thought he'd be pegged for a few more things at the moment. It's gone a bit.
What I like, don't get me wrong, I like the guy and I like his work, but bloody hell, he's got a lot on.
What I all I can say is he's the good twin of U-Ball.
What was it you were trying to say?
What I want to know is why. I mean, Half-Life I can understand because that's obviously got a narrative there, but Portal. So it's going to be a difficult one. Why didn't they go with either Left 4 Dead or Team Fortress 2?
Because they wanted the cake.
And less hearts.
I personally, if I was going to make a Portal film, I could almost imagine me going against my usual sort of want for sci-fi and action and kind of going a bit, I want to say, European kind of world cinema with it. Because there's so much bits where it's just quiet and there's not really anything happening and there's contemplation.
I suppose to a certain extent, because obviously Portal, the original game, obviously didn't have that much of a story.
Mm.
But yeah. All 2 did have quite a bit of backstory, and I suppose they could actually have it before things went, you know, kind of, you know.
But then I would still say that Half-Life would make a far more compelling film because yeah. of... Or at least sort of like Half-Life through the first game and then maybe up to a point of the second, unless they're going to split it up by sort of game to film.
But he's just going to do the third game in film. That's it. Half-Life Part 3 on the big screen.
Well, I think Left 4 Dead could obviously be a film. It's kind of designed to be almost like a homage to films.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's kind of a film of a game of... that's parodying films of that nature.
Abrams was desperate to reassure people, and I quote, "We're also aware of the cautionary tales of movies that became games and vice versa. Goal here is
evil twin.
Is to treat the world Valve has created in both these properties like anyone would a book or some great story that comes from a pitch or original script, just to treat it with the respect they treat their games and their players with."
Can I just say, I hope that he uses the same system that Valve does with their, you know, actual game development, the Cabal system. So if J.J. Abrams were to actually go to Valve and actually, like, you know, basically work with Valve to, you know, produce the film, that would be far better than just basically saying, yeah. okay, well, you know, I've played the Portal games, I've played the Half-Life games, I'll make a film of that game, yeah. type thing. If you know
what's happened here, don't you? Because he's so busy doing Star Trek, Star Wars, and everything else in major history now, what he's doing is he's actually being very clever by taking the emphasis of Portal and making it so he can just bring everything into one.
Why Abrams? You know?
I don't know, but he's got a new TV show coming out soon as well called Revolution.
He's going to stress out at some point. So horrific.
He's going to be the new Disney. He's just going to be doing it all.
I think I've figured it out, right? Because they keep on saying J.J. Abrams. Perhaps there's actually like A.B. Abrams, A.C. Abrams, A.D. They've already cloned, like, done like 100 clones of him.
And I like multiplicity.
Mm. So the reason he can work on so much is because there are so many of him.
Exactly, yeah.
Running around the world. Well, just wait, Hollywood. What if they haven't managed to contain them within Hollywood? what if?
Abrams on the loose!
Yeah!
Directed by J.J. Abrams.
Exactly. I think it's a true threat to our existence as we know it, really. Our way of life, yes.
And on that point of obviously bringing Star Wars in, can I just say, Disney, stop milking it.
Yes,
with Boba Fett, Han Solo, fucking Yoda films, for fuck's sake. Christ almighty.
Yoda, what?
There's rumours that there's going to be a Yoda spin-off as well as the Boba Fett spin-off and the Han Solo spin-off.
To be fair, I think, to a certain extent, Star Wars was originally designed to be milked.
Mm.
You know, I mean, think of all the merchandise.
Well, definitely with the toys.
Yeah, the toys.
That came out with even the first three films. You know, netted.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, definitely. But, I mean, after you've seen the prequels and that, please, for fuck's sake, just don't.
I would prefer it if they were just focusing on a Han Solo prequel. I'd rather like to know more about his character.
Who would you have to play a young Han Solo?
Shia LaBeouf.
I know.
God, no.
No, I would put him for further things, but not Han.
Indy Sun is back in another role. Sorry.
I'm not sure who. Either the guy. It depends how far back they go.
Obviously not like baby, like.
Well, no, but what was it? The guy that was in Stormbreaker, who was then in that Beauty and the Beast.
Oh yeah.
He can put on muscle to me, I would say, better than Mr. LaBeouf, and is perhaps also capable of being far blonder, which would suit. Hans got that kind of like light brown, dirty blonde thing going on, yep. So his hair would be far more suited to Shears.
You make it sound as though, you know, being blonde is like a skill that you can stick on your CV.
They are genetically rare. They are rare, genetically. I mean, but yes.
Actually, if they'd done it a few years ago and actually started thinking about it quite a few years ago, I think the best person to have played him would have probably been Heath Ledger.
Yes.
That probably would have worked, actually.
Yeah.
Because he's got that cheeky little grin, hasn't he, for a rogue smuggler and stuff, hasn't he?
Just suited to it. I'm going to move on to our last bit of games news for the night. Basically, BioWare have asked that people stop calling the next Mass Effect game Mass Effect 4. It's not Mass Effect 4. Get lost.
It's Mass Effect Barry.
It's Mass Effect, a prequel of some kind. We're not going to tell you year, where, or anything. Blah. It's years down the line. It probably won't get unveiled until E3's kind of finally dissolved into a puddle.
I mean, if it follows like the Resident Evil trail, it'll be Mass Effect Zero.
Well, maybe they'll call it a completely different thing. Perhaps.
Might do. Yeah. Revenge of the Reapers.
Because they want to do a completely different branding angle. Because the only reason you'd keep Mass Effect in the title is if you wanted to make use of the branding.
Am I right in thinking that you said you did say prequel, didn't you?
Yeah, that's yeah. Looking like it's not. Well, it's not set.
It might be set after the events of Mass Effect 3, though, aren't it?
Can somebody click on the link?
Yeah, I read it earlier, and they were saying that it might actually be set after the events of Mass Effect
3. Set after, yeah, okay. But at the same time, they don't want it to be called Mass Effect 4 because there's no Shepard.
But then how are we supposed to reference it? ME?
That next...
Well, it can still be Mass Effect because that refers to the whole technology that drives, you know, space travel and everything. Yeah.
Perhaps...
No, go on.
Perhaps they're planning on basically having this almost like a spin-off type thing, which a lot of series do.
And be careful, no spoilers.
Yeah, for 3. A lot of series do seem to have, like, you know, the main games being 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, up and whatnot, and then spin-offs being, you know, called Resident Evil Survivor or, you know, stuff like that. So perhaps that's what they're, you know, kind of thinking. That's their logic, maybe.
I just would like to know a working title. It could be, you know, it could be just like a super secret kind of, it has no relevance to the final product or whatever, some kind of quirky code name.
Secret Squirrel in Mass Effect.
Yes.
We've got a picture called that, Secret Squirrel.
Yeah, we actually do have a photograph in a frame called Secret Squirrel. Anyway, okay. I'm going to take this away from that. Interesting development. I mean, we were talking about Black Mirror last week. As we record and edit this episode, Black Mirror will actually be starting again, which means will be available for AD this week.
I started watching the first series.
Yes.
Yay.
But Mr. Robert Downey Jr. has bought the rights to season one's The Entire History of You from Black Mirror.
Which... actually, it could be pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
It could work really well considering the types of films that, you know, Hollywood would like to try.
I mean, what I'm interested in is basically it's Robert Downey Jr. that's bought this. Not like,
yeah, that's what I mean. It's
I was reading one of the things, I think one of the tweets we saw was that George Clooney had lost out and Downey had won.
A battle between Downey and Clooney.
Yes.
Yeah, which is like a lol.
Yeah. There
are people who would love to see that.
Yeah.
That's a celebrity deathmatch just waiting to happen. Actually, that's a series I just want properly resurrected.
What, celebrity deathmatch?
Yeah, celebrity deathmatch is friggin' awesome. But anyway, so Dan Jr.'s got the rights to Black Mirror's The Entire History of You. This means that he may not necessarily be in the film. I'm not sure if he actually owns his own production studio, but if he's got the rights, tends to mean that he could go to a production studio or a studio and go, hey, do you want to make this? Kind of like what happened with Brad Pitt and World War Z, as he bought the rights.
He's probably around J.J. Abrams' house now.
Oh, God, no! No!
Screw you, J.J. Abrams, you're too busy. I'm going to see you, Bolt.
Oh, no!
Robert Downey Jr.'s career trying...
you know what? No, he's gonna get. Maybe he'll keep it a bit English and go to Guy Ritchie.
Ooh,
yeah.
Because you know, working on, with him with the charts. Or I mean, maybe he would work with somebody like Whedon.
Maybe. That'd be cool.
If he's not too busy, obviously doing.
Yeah, well, he can't be any busier than bloody Abrams, can he?
Yeah, true.
Christopher Nolan.
I think he could perhaps convey the dark. And horrifying nature of the concept put forward in that TV episode.
Perhaps he could just pay Charlie Brooker to actually, you know, write a feature-length version of it.
Yeah.
No. Well, maybe.
Although that episode wasn't a Brooker episode.
Oh. No. It wasn't that. Because it was he only wrote. Did he only write one of the first season?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Really, I thought it was.
No, it's like he conceptualized it and wrote one episode, and other people got involved.
Oh, you see, I did not know that, and now that's kind of
that's kind of thrown you, isn't it?
I mean, it has. I can't remember.
That teach you to do your research.
Brooker's the Prime Minister episode.
You know, that wouldn't surprise me. That was the guess I had.
I'll leave that for other people to find out.
Because it seems like one of his.
Yeah, it's kind of got his way with humour and societal observation kind of thrown in there. I'm going to now move us on to our last bit of news of the week. We didn't hear about this until after we'd recorded and put the episode up last week. But there'd been, in the past month, a legal-ish battle between Games Workshop and... a writer who'd written a book called Spots the Space Marine. And basically GameStop had gone to Amazon, gone, you remove that ebook, and they'd taken the ebook down. Of course, Spots the Space Marine's author was just like, wait a minute. Wait a darn picking minute. Why the hell have you got the rights to do that? And basically Games Workshop throw around, well, you know, we've got that trademark, blah, blah, blah sort of thing. And the simple fact of the matter is that there's literary evidence predating Games Workshop by 40 years or more. using the term Space Marine. May not be capitalised or whatever, but quite frankly, you shouldn't be able to trademark the capitalisation of things if you consider the various house stars that exist for doing titles. It's just ridiculous. So the book on, I think it was Friday, just gone, finally reappeared back on Amazon after, was it the Electronics Frontier Foundation? Is it that way around?
I think so.
The EFF had got involved and kind of gone, well, look, you know, this is ridiculous. This stuff existed beforehand. And basically BBC reported today that, yeah, it's back. But Games Workshop on Friday released this rather dubious-looking statement on their Facebook page. That's just like, oh, you know, we're always about protecting our trademarks, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, how can you trademark something that had been used prior to that? I mean, let's think about it. The concept of a marine as a military force is pretty common. The concept in sci-fi of military forces... going into space.
Space.
It's pretty freaking common.
So yeah.
It'd be natural one would combine the two.
It's such a almost generic. It's more a description than a name. It's not like they're calling them the Galactic Frontiersmen or something.
It's not like they're calling them, oh, what's the name of all the clones in Star Wars?
Barry.
Oh, Stormtroopers.
It's not like they call it, they didn't call them Stormtroopers, but they're essentially Space Marines.
So if they're bothered about that, how come they didn't sue Crake for using Space Marine Corps?
I'm not sure.
And there's a company called Space Marine Corps who ships store supplies for any port in South Korea.
Don't forget Blizzard.
Yeah, it's the Space Marine. The term Space Marine's been around in everything from TV, videos, comic books, everything.
Should fantasy writers be able to sue Games Workshop for using orcs?
But then, I mean, it depends.
Or how... horses.
Yeah. Feet.
No, that'd be Tesco.
Feet and Tesco, yeah. Totally.
Do you know what I mean, though? If they'd actually been working on that sort of thing, over the years, they could have been financial billionaires.
But when...
They've missed a trick there, haven't they?
It reminds me a little bit of, is anyone familiar with the whole Edge trademark in gaming?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was one arsehat who published a few games in the 80s under The Edge, who went around, he trademarked the term Edge, the word Edge, and, you know, derivations thereof, and went around suing anyone he could possibly find. And most of the time, because as soon as, you know, they looked at the paperwork, it's like, well, he does seem to own a trademark called Edge. They'd just pay up, and that's how he made his money for about the last 15, 20 years. And it took, I think it was EA, to stand up to him and say, this is a little bit stupid, because he tried suing them over Mirror's Edge. So it just took someone to actually, you know, pursue him in court.
Can I just say, I'm sorry, guys, but this is going to peeve you off slightly. I'm trademarking the name Paul.
No!
It was already done on the 6th of May 1979.
Oh, what? How do you know that?
Because that's when I was born.
So May 1975, come on, royalties.
Money.
But as the EFF were kind of keen to point out, it was further evidence of a growing trend of where basically much larger companies try to essentially bully the smaller fry when it comes to trademarks issues.
That's exactly what it is.
And, you know, it's like they're not going to lose any bloody sales from this. Well, they're not. They're probably going to lose sales now, because if you see the comments that are on the statement they made, there's a lot of people, parents go, well, I'm not bringing my kids to your shops anymore, blah, blah, kind of thing.
But, I mean, if you think about it, this has done far more damage to Games Workshop than it has done to the author, because the author's got his, you know, book.
I think it might be a lady.
Yeah, I think it is a lady author.
An author can be a lady.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm being non-gender descriptive.
Okay.
But the author is obviously going to get more sales from, or, you know, more interest from for her book now than, you know, if it was just, you know, released as it was.
I mean, to be honest, it's about as heavy-handed as the crap that was being pulled off over here when the friggin' Olympics were going on. It came to trademark stuff to do with that.
Oh, God, they had the trademark police out and everything, didn't they?
You know, and it's just like, and I still don't quite agree with the Scrolls ruling. ZeniMax and Bethesda and Notch and Mojang. Because it's like, oh, Scrolls is a trademark with the games, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, really, I still claim when the argument I was sort of making back then when that's kicked off was like, well, what if I want to make Dead Sea Scrolls the game? If one is talking about the Dead Sea Scrolls, one cannot help but use the word scrolls.
I mean, theoretically...
That's change it to parchment.
If you could...
not refer to like that.
But, I mean, if you could actually put the ruling in retroactively, just think of how much money Bethesda could make by suing the church using the Dead Sea Scrolls to make their book.
Well, now is the perfect time to launch a lawsuit against the Catholic Church, because they're going to be a bit disorientated for a while, so, you know, if you're going to do it...
I thought they already were.
Well, more so than usual, so I suggest the next couple of weeks, prime time for putting in a legal claim. Yeah.
Yeah, because we're like...
Do not listen to this advice.
But if you do, and you do win, that's 10% for me. Thank you.
I'm going to now take us on to something that I was quite surprised to learn of. And at the same time, I have very mixed feelings about, and it's our main feature of this week. And we're going to be talking amongst ourselves about the woman in refrigerators trope. This is because, A, I had a discussion with somebody from Oh No Video Games about this, and B, because I got pointed in the direction of what's happening to Lois Lane as a result of the prequel comics to, you know, what was the name of the video game?
Gods of Injustice.
This is the next DC, beat 'em up, basically, that's coming out.
Done by the guys behind Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
Okay, if you'd like to explain what Women in Fridge Syndrome is.
Basically, it's a plot point where you don't really get to know a female character or anything, but they're quite important to a male character, i.e. the protagonist, the hero, whatever, and they are essentially killed in order to drive the protagonist on to reaching the various plot points.
Yeah, the call
story,
to arms.
The call to arms for a story. It's what's known as an inciting incident in script terms.
And basically their importance in a story is their importance to another character. It's not actually anything important about them.
Yeah.
Apart from, you know, man character loves lady character.
Lady character is killed brutally. Male character must go out and get revenge.
Yes.
The phrase caveman springs to mind.
Yeah.
We'll just club her over the head and take it back to the cave. Dush, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun. Part of the problem with this trope is that it
just describe the Superman thing just a little bit more?
Okay.
So basically, the situation is, and these prequel comments to it, was it Gods of...
Injustice.
Is that basically Lois Lane ends up rather... Was she very pregnant and then ends up very dead? It was quite horrific. The Joker was involved. Yeah.
And Harlequin.
In this prequel stuff. And this is what drives Superman so far over the edge that he will attack other superheroes. And do whatever the heck is going to be doing and leading up to the story of the game.
Mm. But by the same token, I mean, you know, because part of the problem is that it's woman in the fridge. But by the same token, it's basically a description of somebody being pushed over the edge. Mm. And in most cases, I think a woman in fridge syndrome, with most kind of films and stories and whatnot, it's to push the good guy into action more than anything else. So mostly kind of, you know, doing something good type thing. Whereas this is actually kind of push him over the edge to make him go crazy.
At the same time, the reaction from some people has been that, oh, we shouldn't do women in refrigerator type thing, where basically the whole point of the female character is to drive the story. But and people complaining about these female characters not having any characterization, blah, blah, this, blah, blah, that. And it's like, well, you know what? If you characterized every bloody character that's in a film or a comic or a novel or whatever, you know what? You'd never tell the bloody story.
Well, it's not just that, but I mean, I distinctly remember an episode of, what is it, Justice League from, I think it's like a 2000s cartoon series of, you know, DC heroes. And basically they're like, there's a kind of parallel world where the Flash gets killed by Lex Luthor,
which is
Superman over the edge to form basically the Justice Lords instead. It's pretty much the same thing, only it's the Flash instead. So,
and the thing is that Lois Lane is perhaps a poor choice because she's had bloody loads of characterization historically.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Whereas an alternate version of the Flash, because, I mean, don't forget this is a parallel universe. Obviously, he could have been a dick in that universe.
Mm. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know. It just seems a bit...
But, I mean... discussion I was having with somebody from Ono Video Games about the idea of, and this was before the Lois Lane thing came out, it was in regards to female characters in Seven Psychopaths. And basically, like, oh, you know, like the women in that, women in refrigerators, like it's their passing that drives the characters, sort of thing, and you don't get much time with them and stuff. Apart from the fact that I believe that two of the characters in the film could very well be the same person, in which case actually they do get a lot of screen time and characterization. I will not reveal any more than that because it would technically sort of be a spoiler. Hasn't been confirmed or denied by the film's writer, director.
It's like they did that in Star Trek, though, didn't they, in the original series? If you wore a certain colour top, you knew that character was going to die.
Yeah.
You don't know why.
The red shirt ensign.
Yeah, the red shirt ensign, that's the one, yeah. You were going to die. You'd hate to be given that job. You've got an acting role. The red shirt. Oh, God.
Thing is, though, most fictional texts happen to have male heterosexual protagonists. Fun enough, as far as I can tell, it's my experience that male heterosexuals have a love of women, and they tend to quite often, at certain points in their lives, have a particular woman in their life that they're rather fond of. So one could theorise, quite reasonably, I think, that if something were to happen to said woman, it would cause them to do stuff.
Yeah.
Of course it would. I mean, the thing that sort of got me when I was reading it, though, was how it was Joker and Harlequin with Lois Lane and Superman. That bit didn't really gel with me. You'd have thought it'd have been either Robin or, you know, something to do with Batman rather than Superman, to be fair, and it would have been Lex Luthor kidnapping Lois Lane or whatever.
It just seemed to be, oh, they can do nasty stuff, as, you know, proven with some of the Dark Knight.
To a certain extent, it's more understandable that it's that, because basically, no matter what the Joker and Harley Quinn does, Batman would refuse to kill them. He would basically lock them up again. Which then
But then you could say the same about Superman, because Superman's very, very. Batman's actually got more of a darker side than Superman.
Exactly, which you know causes the tension there.
Exactly.
That Batman would rather lock them up, whereas Superman would rather, you know, actually get revenge.
I think in this particular situation, the whole calling it the woman refrigerator syndrome is a bit unfair because of the fact that Lois Lane, I mean, the whole point of the women refrigerators trope is that there isn't much characterization of a female character involved, whereas Lois Lane has a friggin' mountain of characterization.
I mean, because I was discussing this, obviously, with Emily previously, and we've come up with numerous examples of where that trope doesn't quite fit. Say, for example, Assault on Precinct 13. Now, that the you know, basically got, you know, riled up the gang because his daughter was shot. Now, that's not a woman in a refrigerator. That's a daughter in a refrigerator.
I mean, to be honest, to deny the allowance of significant others or whatever to main characters being killed in fictional texts means that you close down a whole thing of actually what does happen in real life because people do act frigging crazy, do go out and do stuff, you know. I mean, oh yeah, you could have them moping around and being depressive, but actually there's a huge chunk of people that will actually take action when something horrific happens to somebody they care about.
Heck, also, if the darkness is an example, not only does Jenny get killed, but she's also characterized to a certain extent better after her death.
Yeah.
Would you argue?
Yeah. That's in the games.
Yeah.
I'm not sure because I haven't got that far in the original comics or the sort of reboot that they've currently on. But yeah. But it's just, it's like, oh, we can't kill. It's kind of like this weird, almost pseudo feminist argument that you can't because it's a woman and, oh, there's not much characterization. And it's like, well, you don't have the time to characterise everyone, and oh yes, there's a significant other, but the whole point is that it's all symbolic, so there will be symbols around to show that person is important to the protagonist.
Yeah, I mean, bearing in mind that obviously the reason that you'd use kind of stereotypes and basically just general kind of character paradigms for, you know, characters in a story is when you don't have time to explain them.
Yeah. You just people forget that you're actually quite constrained at the end of the day what you're allowed to put into a finished piece, be it a film, comic, video game. I mean, we've heard it time and time again, like stuff that gets left out of video games and films because apparently they don't have the time. I think X-Men 3, the film is a great example of how apparently they didn't have enough time and a whole load of story got chucked out if you watch the deleted
scenes. That would have made far more sense if it had been left in.
Yeah. But apparently,
so it would have been slightly less crap.
They pretty much sabotaged it in the editing phase. Yeah. It was really weird.
But,
oh, bloody hell.
Okay, so you could argue, but you know, women always get female characters get quite often a raw deal in fictional texts. It's like, right, well, okay, write some bloody texts where there's a woman who's the main character, and then okay, so what if a man or another woman or a child in the, you know, you've got the same thing going again, and it's basically denying the plot point of having a death being a driver, a compelling reason for people to do stuff.
Kill Bill. Now, the death in that is kind of her past life stroke, her unborn child stroke, her freedom type thing. And she comes back and, you know, battles her way through it.
But it's essentially denying the idea of having death as a motivator, and then complaining at the same time, oh, it's because these people aren't being characterised enough. And it's like, we can't. Writers cannot compute the idea of characterizing a non-protagonist or a non-antagonist.
Somebody that actually has to get killed at the end of the first act, in essence.
If this character is so important to the, you know, the protagonist, you know, let us know more. You know, so that, you know, the character actually means something, because otherwise it's just, oh, well, they're just around.
At the same time, people complain about it, and it's like, well, no, you normally figure out that they're a big deal. I mean, like, for instance, is anyone complaining about Peter Parker's uncle, Uncle Ben? Anyone complaining about Uncle Ben?
He does excellent, right?
But I mean,
he had some very wise words as well, to be fair.
For example, I know it's not obviously in the same chronological order and whatnot, but Batman. His parents were theoretically in the fridge. They were there to get killed Bruce Wayne to become Batman.
You know hardly anything about his parents, really.
What? Why aren't they saying, you know, what about this parents in the fridge syndrome?
What about the Punisher? His whole family gets brutally murdered.
Yeah.
Same with...
Where's the complaints about
same
that?
Same to a certain extent with...
Same with the movie. That got brutally murdered as well.
Oh.
I mean, it's basically the whole... You know, the whole argument against the trope is not that it's used as a plot device. It's just how bloody common it is. It just seems to be... we want this character to go off the deep end. We want this character to have motivation to do something, you know, so out of the ordinary for them.
Yeah.
You know... So, they lose their, you know, their wife or their girlfriend,
or their pet goldfish.
It's just laziness.
But at the same time, the whole superhero genre is lazy most of the time. There's not much in the way of original work going on.
How many of these superheroes are orphans?
How many of these superheroes are millionaires and moonlight as superheroes?
One, two, three.
How many of these superheroes actually may have non-Earth-based origins? How many of these superheroes may in fact be part God? How many of these superheroes may in fact be partially in touch with the more magical side of existence? How many of these superheroes come from Swindon? Actually, not that many.
Hang on. I've lost count of the first one you said now. Oh, damn it.
But it's, I mean, the way...
Serious business.
Superhero genre has certainly been run... Like, Marvel and DC, certainly DC, it's like, you're not going to get much original stuff going on.
It just goes round in a big circle all the time.
You could perhaps get some original stuff if they laid off the superhero stuff a little... You know, they actually did... Actually, that means being four cutbacks, the amount of stuff being written, and then slowly but surely, resurrect the old thing, put other stuff into temporary retirement, and just, you know, just recycling through things on a far more frequent basis. Maybe you get some fresher stuff going on, but they don't. And it's the same thing, and also to the same extent with the sort of blockbuster Hollywood films. You've got a similar situation going on where it's the safe bets that tend to be, which means, yeah, it's a dude, his family's in trouble or gets killed, he does stuff, dear Liam Neeson.
I mean, to a certain extent, I think I understand why that kind of trope is there. It's basically because what more of a motivating factor is there than risk to your family?
Yeah.
Kind of a universal.
Yeah.
It is.
For that.
And it's something that's been going on for millennia. Mm.
But, I mean, there's, you know, you can think of more unique ways of doing it, I think.
Yeah, there would be. I mean, I don't know. They could have a red kryptonite sort of microchip implanted into the base of his skull.
I hate Superman. Do you know what? For Superman, having Lois Lane killed is original. Using kryptonite is about as unoriginal as you can get with Superman. At least that's my feeling after sitting through how many seasons of Smallville?
I think there's 10 in total. But,
yeah. Well, 10 TV series. I mean, obviously, they've got the comics. But yeah, sitting through that many series of friggin' Smallville and almost everything that goes wrong in Clark's time is just kryptonite based.
But that's one of my biggest arguments with Superman. That's why I don't really like Superman, because he's such a. He's so perfect that there's only one thing that can kill him. I know he's supposed to be like super, you know, whatever and everything else, but they did sort of limit their choices when somebody came up and said, well, actually, I think there's only one thing that's going to kill him, a rock. We'll call it kryptonite.
To be fair, though, I think they've been actually pretty creative. I mean, the origins of him have been pretty creative with throwing... you know, his share of bad guys. I mean, obviously there's thingy.
Doomsday?
Say, for example, Doomsday. There's Brainiac. There's, what is it?
Brainiac was cool.
Zod.
Yeah.
Basically, these are...
The Ultra Zod.
Exactly. Kryptonian-based, you know, villains, in essence.
Yeah.
And every now and again, he goes back to beating up Lex Luthor.
Yeah. Poor Lex. poor Lex. Oh, dear of him. I can't completely get on side with the arguments for... I mean, and then the article that kind of spread on the Lois Lane angle of this is the whole comparing it to what would fans' reactions be. Like, everyone's kind of accepted Lois Lane getting killed. And then kind of comparing it to, oh, what would happen if Superman's penis was cut off using a knife made out of kryptonite.
See, I think that's
part.
That's part of the problem, though. I mean, people are taking this idea of, you know, the woman in the fridge and taking it and saying it's woman in the fridge, rather than saying it's basically a plot point. It's designed to spur on the superhero.
It's any significant other who ends up being untimely.
Exactly.
To be honest, nobody tends to be spurred on in quite the same way when somebody meets their time due to natural causes. Some might, if it's cancer or something, some characters may be compelled to do charitable work afterwards and the similar. But they rarely, you know, if somebody death, the reason it's such a big deal, and the reason I would say it's used so much is because death is such an important aspect of our actual lives.
Yeah.
It's something none of us can actually escape. And that is why people who are writers, creators, repeatedly come back to it, because the drive of Thanatos is that immense.
Yeah. Well, there's always going to be elements that, you know, writers come back to, because they're using a language in essence. And it's people nitpicking too often and too closely that they kind of miss that, you know, this is kind of part of a language.
It's symbolic to an almighty degree, because it is so integral to our very lives.
Yeah, and it works to push it, doesn't it? I mean, if you want to, how many TV episodes or series have we seen where everything's been shaken up because one of the main characters has been killed off and nobody saw it coming? Nobody's gone up in arms going, ah, you can't kill him off and everything else. But it's done what they wanted it to do. It's spurred interest into it. It's got people watching it again, and it's just brought everybody back to it.
And I have to say, it's kind of how you do it as well. I mean, if you look at something like Buffy, the death of her mother, that was an entire episode that was completely, you know, the sound on it was just like there was so many kind of silences and pauses and contemplations of the characters, and it was such amazingly well done that yeah. it really did kind of hit you. Whereas, you know, I don't know, Smallville or something like that, you know, I can't even remember, you know, somebody being killed off in...
Oh, Clark's dad.
Yeah, Clark's dad. You know, there was a bit of a, you know, teary kind of tear-jerk moment.
There was the whole funeral episode, though.
Yeah, but it doesn't have the same impact as, you know, basically this almost like absence. You know, you kind yeah. of feel the absence while watching the episode.
It does come... Key come back to it, but the main argument by why we should avoid the women in refrigerators thing is because of a lack of characterization of the female character. And it's like, well, what do you class as characterization? Because there's a lot going on that could be characterization. It's dependent on whether or not you're aware enough of the symbolism and sort of mise-en-scene and stuff that might be going on that actually characterises the character without dialogue, without following their every step.
I mean, if this was, you know, say, for example, if we changed it around, so it's actually a female lead having a lesbian relationship with another woman, and that woman gets killed, would we still have woman in the fridge? Because there's more than one woman there.
What, like Willow and Tara and Buffy?
Exactly, yeah.
Willow... Yeah.
I mean, obviously, there's a difference that because, you know, Willow, not Willow, because Tara was actually, you know, characterised during the series. Yeah, but
at the same time, yeah. it's a TV series versus a short form comic, a shorter comic versus, like, films and that. And actually, I suspect that if you broke it down into mathematically relative units in the proportion number of episodes of Buffy versus, like, how many times... you could sort of describe some characterization of Tara was going on, and you'd probably actually find the ratios are probably similar.
But I mean, there wouldn't be this problem with woman in the fridge.
No.
Women in the fridge. It'll be basically, you know, the death of a character spurs on, you know, somebody to either good or bad. So
go on.
So, what I think is the problem is that people you know, kind of occasionally get an example of a female character, like one of the only female characters in something that does get killed off, having an effect on the main character, and they get hung up on that, and they don't actually, you know, realise that they're getting hung up on the semantics of the specific situation rather than the paradigm as a whole.
Mm. So I've just got an idea for a modern version of this.
Go on.
Okay.
Returns home, switches on his games machine. No, his or her games machine, because this would work for either gender. All the progress and all the games, all their save games are gone. They've just been wiped. I think that would work just as well.
Superman would be lobotomizing people left, right, and center. That'd be complete chaos.
Oh, man.
You killed my level 80 warrior!
You bastard!
Don't make jokes about that. That's just
Skyrim.
Yeah.
I didn't mean anything by it. If something has happened to your game, please don't kill me.
Yeah.
You heard it here first, viewers. If Paul isn't here next week, you know why.
I don't want to stuff.
There's not enough
room. I do not want to be stuffed.
There's not enough
fridge.
Room for you in the fridge. Not even if I took all the shelving out. They're too small.
Not now that you've got that horse lasagna in there.
There's not enough room with the... There just isn't.
Only frozen horses.
On Facebook or somewhere.
But, yeah. I mean, Retro, is there anything you want to sum up on your views of refrigerators, people dying, Uncle?
I just think it's... You can have motivations. I'm not... You know, either a sibling or a loved one dying or something terrible happened to them, you know, would be a good driver. It's a good motivation for a story, you know, for a character to go off, you know, the deep end. The sort of, you know, Michael Winner type, you know, revenge film. But it's just, there are so many of them that are so overdone. As soon, it does, it doesn't really matter if it's Lois Lane or another character. It's just that's the seems to be the first thing that comes to mind for a lot of these authors. It seems to be, right, well, why don't we kill, you know, this character off? And if you've spent so much time, as you say, you know, adding to the Lois lore.
Mm.
I mean, she doesn't have a comic of her own now, does she? Or does she?
I don't think she does at the moment.
She has, at least once in the past. So it just seems to be, you reduce, when you use a character like that, you reduce them to just that trope. And it's just a singular lack of imagination. That's the only thing you can think of to do with that character. That's the only thing you can think of as a motivation. You know, it couldn't be, you know, a loss of, you know, something else personal, or, you know...
She was maimed rather than killed. She, like, put in a wheelchair or put in a coma or something.
Oh, yeah, but we're...
Well, even then, that's a sort of variation on the trope, isn't it? It's a woman in a refrigerated wheelchair.
But I mean, I suppose really, the whole, if we're going to boil it down from death, really what death is about is loss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the main driver for most fictional characters is loss. And at the same time, the main driver for a lot of people in their actual lives is to avoid loss.
Yeah.
To overcome loss. So.
Because now, a good motivation would be, you know, to do something to protect the ones you love.
But if we're going to go a bit further and then just scrutinise just the base idea that it seems that these writers of this prequel and the game really wanted Superman to go off on one. Perhaps this is the problem and not the trope that they used. It was just the fact that they wanted, because it's the fact that Superman is driven to fight against good guys by the looks of things.
And it's just, okay.
I mean, obviously, this is kind of a spin-off of, in essence, Mortal Kombat, because it's the same guys that did it, and they did Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe and whatnot. So I can understand a certain need to impurify DC in a way, you know, because obviously with Mortal Kombat, you know, if you're having like Liu Kang versus Sonya, they're both good guys, but only one of them can win. They know that, and you can get them to fight, but. Batman versus Superman, you do need a very, very special circumstance to make them fight.
Do you know what? Perhaps we've now encountered a fighting game where they're actually trying to put in too much feckin' story. Perhaps
quite possibly.
Finally happened. Perhaps they've gone well past the minimum needed to make a fighting game enjoyable for those of us who can't do insane combos.
True, but by the same token, as somebody that likes story in video games, you'd be happy.
Yeah, but fighting games don't need it.
Well, to be honest, the story in DC Universe versus Mortal Kombat, that was reasonable, the whole two worlds merging thing.
To a certain extent,
a trope of its own, to be honest.
Yeah, because, I mean, the way that they did it was like, two super villains were kind of quelled at the same time and somehow merged. And it kind of doesn't really make sense. But, okay, we'll go with it. And then, you know, the rest of it makes sense.
I mean, but basically I would say that, I normally argue for story in games that aren't something like Super Hexagon. I'm kind of like, maybe they've just gone a bit, they've maybe actually thought about this too much.
There are games that need plot and there are games that don't. And it's that I've never sat down with Pac-Man and wondered why exactly he's doing what he is.
And it'd be also interesting because obviously the last DC game to really have sort of like prequel comics kind of going on was Arkham City.
Yes.
And it'd be interesting to know what the sale, if it's also a sales thing, like were the sales of the Arkham City prequel comics and the graphic that they released of that, were they actually pretty good? And then the only reason they're actually doing this isn't to help create story for the game, it's just to create more money.
More money.
But,
Oh, yeah, money.
Yeah. Yes, while you two do that, I'll just point out that it's a little bit weird that it seemed to be that, you know, characters like Batman were comics. And then, of course, the famously bad TV series. and now they're doing things like Arkham Asylum and Arkham City, where the comics are almost merchandising for the game.
Mm. Yeah.
Because you can bet that the game sold a hell of a lot more than the comics did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just weird to me.
It makes sense, because, I mean, if you think about it, you know, Transformers was toys. Then they, you know, supplement it with TV series. And now they're kind of doing the same thing with the movies and whatnot.
It's all going full circle again.
As we've been going, it's all about money.
But I think to sum up what we've been trying to talk about for the past half hour or so, is one, women in refrigerators, it's trope, it's about death is about loss. Pretty much the main driving factor for everyone in life is to either overcome or avoid loss. So pretty much every inciting incident will have something to do about a character losing something, either a part of themselves, something, or someone. So if you want something original, you're essentially asking for a happy story where no emotion or dramatic crap happens.
It just remains to be seen where they actually get killed off in, you know, in the act structure.
So, you know, and killing Lois, it kind of makes sense, because yes, that would be enough to probably drive Superman over the edge. It's a shame they've decided to go for that rather than just the general threat of a bad guy being enough.
You know what would have been interesting, though?
What?
Is if somehow they would have killed off Superman and actually super-powered Lois Lane up, and she's the one that goes mental.
That would have been far more interesting, but then that's just the fact that people are looking for something different, where we've got a female protagonist who's actually empowered, which doesn't happen as often as it could.
Or should,
yeah.
See, I had thought that myself. It's just, why on earth does it have to be, you know, always one way round? That's the issue with it, really, isn't it?
I mean, I suppose the way we could get around this is if people could start saying, well, actually, no, we would like some more female protagonists, and actually, to an extent...
I, for one, would love more female protagonists.
I mean, I like to try and write with female protagonists in mind rather than male protagonists, so... But at the same time, there are still male characters in the stories. But, you know, it's just the women are not necessarily chasing after kids or boyfriends all the time. So it's like, I don't think it's necessarily a trope that needs to disappear. I do question the motivations.
Exactly. That's the whole thing. That's the whole problem with it.
But I would say that in general, like, using it as a trope in fiction, well... It's just an overall trope of the loss of a significant other, and loss is a big motivator.
Yeah.
It's probably the biggest, in a way.
Yeah. I think Freud, Jung, and a couple of more sort of psychodynamic approach guys and girls would probably agree with us on that.
Yeah, we've got Freud on our side.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Freud in particular would like the Superman penis thing.
Yes.
Superman.
Oh, dearie. Ladies, gentlemen, this has been Nerds Assemble. This is all we have time for this week, if we're going to remain sane and awake, or at least be able to go to bed.
So, which is questionable.
So, it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul, aka OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter. And you can also find me lurking around thegamejar.com.
Okay, and it's good night from me. I'm Paul Blewett. I have Twitter, PaulBlewett.com.
No, it won't.
No, I don't. I'm getting confused. No, it's just Paul Blewett on Twitter. And I've got a website, Paul-Blewett.com.
My name's Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891. You can also jump by my website if you want at EK-creations.com. nerdassemble.com. You can find the podcast itself over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also on iTunes. We're on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. Plus, we're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. I believe that's everything. So, good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.